It does seem like we have a lot of young people here today, and I think that that's wonderful to start with, but it encourages me in speaking on the subject that I'm going to speak on here, because we're only a little over 3 weeks away from Passover, as we heard in the sermonette leading up to that as well. But God instructs us to examine ourselves. Notice that over in 1 Corinthians 11th chapter, 1 Corinthians 11, and I'm not going to read the whole section here other than to say that Paul was correcting the Corinthians because they were not keeping the Passover in the proper manner. And I say in the proper manner, they were keeping it very frivolously. And sometimes the verses that we read here are kind of scary because he says if you eat it unworthily, you bring forth damnation to yourself. But he was not talking about us being, quote, worthy enough. That was not the issue. We are all unworthy, otherwise we wouldn't be taking it. But here in verse 17, he says, now in giving these instructions, I do not praise you since you come together not for the better but for the worse. It's possible to actually come to the Passover service or to come to Sabbath services or a holy day and come together for the worse if we don't come in the right attitude and the frame of mind. But he says here in verse 28, but let a man examine himself and let him eat of the bread and drink of the cup. For he who eats and drinks in an unworthy manner eats and drinks judgment to himself and not discerning the Lord's body, not comprehending what it is that we're doing. And it is very important that we understand what the Passover is all about if we're going to keep it. And, of course, we must keep it if we want to be Christ. We can't just say, okay, I'm scared, so I won't keep it. I'll play it safe, like the man who hid his mina instead of doing something with it. So in today's sermon, I'm going to briefly address how to prepare for Passover in the days of unleavened bread. But along the way, I'll address when we're to observe the Passover, because this is very important. It's important to understand when the Passover is, because it's important to understand what the next night pictures, and that, of course, is also a commanded assembly. It's not an optional thing. It's something that we are commanded to do, the night to be much observed. So let's begin by settling the question of when we are to observe Passover. And I don't know exactly when we covered this last time, but with all the young people growing up and newer people coming along, it's very important that we understand this, because the subject of when to keep the Passover has been controversial. As long as I've been in the church, and I started attending 62 years ago, it was controversial then, it's controversial from time to time. It doesn't mean every year, but it keeps coming back from time to time. And when we read the 12th chapter of the book of Exodus, it's understandable why it is a bit controversial, because Moses wrote those words, and of course, for him, he knew exactly what he was talking about. And yet, he condensed a lot of things in a very short space of time, just like in Genesis, the first five chapters, he condensed about, 1,500 years or more within a very short period of time there. And so everything is not always spelled out as easily or clearly as we would like to have it spelled out. And so in the book of Exodus, in the 12th chapter, there are those who misunderstand, misread it. And so let's look at it very quickly here. Because those who get all worked up about this must be the church is wrong about this or the church is wrong about that. You know, it's interesting, in all those years of being in the church, one thing I've noticed, that when people go off on their own, forgetting that God is working through his church, it's not a matter of just accepting everything as without proof. But once we prove where God is working, we ought to have some confidence that God is going to use his ministry to lead us in the right direction, because those individuals who go off on various calendar issues, on when Passover is, when the Feast of Pentecost is, some of these issues, sacred names, those things, they go off and they really go nowhere. And they end up really doing nothing. And very often, the very issue that took them out of the church is just a short step to being an unbeliever in God, period. I've seen that. It's been kind of shocking that somebody gets so excited about, a particular issue, and then pretty soon it's not that issue. They're just off and on their own little world out there, not even believing that God exists, because they're all by themselves. They're rejecting what God is doing and how God is working. Now, can the church ever be wrong on some things? Absolutely. Mr. Armstrong was wrong 40 years on the day of Pentecost. But when it was shown to him from a bit of a different source than he had been looking at it, then he accepted that and he changed. He didn't take a vote on it. He just changed. And the church changed at that time, and some people didn't accept that. And where'd they go? Basically nowhere. They stayed around for a period of time with a few hundred members, and then I guess they're still probably out there someplace, but they're not preaching the gospel to the world or anything like that. Current Jewish practice is to observe the Passover on the 15th of Nisan, the 15th day of the first month. And yet the scripture says that Passover is the 14th. Liberal teachers in the Worldwide Church of God reasoned that Passover was killed, as the Jews practice it, in the afternoon of the 14th, but then it was eaten on the night of the 15th. Now, again, this could be difficult to understand, because there are certain things condensed here in the 12th chapter of Exodus, but it does fly in the face of the fact that God says Passover is the 14th and the feast is the 15th. And yet they try to conflate the two. The real question comes down to, well, let's just read it here in Exodus, the 12th chapter. Verse 1, it says, "Now the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, This month shall be your beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you." Verse 3, Exodus 12, verse 3. "Speak to all the congregation of Israel, saying, On the 10th day, or the 10th of this month, every man shall take for himself a lamb, according to the house of his father, a lamb for a household. And if the household is too small for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next to his house take it according to the number of the persons. According to each man's need, you shall make your count for the lamb." Now, it is interesting there that he doesn't speak of tents. He speaks of houses, that they were in houses at this time. And there's nothing indicating a tent or qualifying for that. He does qualify that if you don't have a lamb, you can take a goat of the first year. Verse 5, "Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats." And then verse 6, it's a key here. "Now you shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month. Then the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at twilight." Now, this is the New King James Version. It says, "shall kill it at twilight." I think most of us know what twilight is. It's time when the sun sets until it gets dark. It's starting to gradually get dark. We call it dusk oftentimes. The Old King James says at evening or at even. But the expression here is ben ha-arbiyim. It means between the two evenings. Between the two evenings. Now, the Jews have interpreted that to mean from the time of noon, when the sun reaches its peak and begins to set or go down, until sunset. That's how they viewed it. And some of the teachers at the Worldwide Church of God during those 70s, when things are being liberalized, taught the same thing, that it was that period of time. We'll see that that's impossible here in just a minute. But that's the way that they view it. And so they sacrifice the lambs in the afternoon. And they do it on the afternoon of the 14th. So let's put it in terms we can understand. If last night was the beginning of the 14th, instead of sacrificing the lamb or the goat, at the beginning of the day, at twilight, between sunset and dark, they would sacrifice it during the daylight portion right now, perhaps, usually around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, mid-afternoon. And then they would keep what we call the night to be observed, which really they would call the Passover, after the sun goes down. So you have this odd thing that they call the 14th the Passover, but they actually eat the Passover on the 15th. So they kill it on the 14th, but they eat it on the 15th. That's really what they teach. And yet some Jews that I have talked to really recognize that they're not really keeping the Passover. They call it Passover, but they realize it's a night to be observed, as we'll learn a little bit more about that in a few moments. But they were to keep it and then kill it at twilight on the 14th. Now, the question is, what does this expression, Ben Ha'arba'im, or between the two evenings, mean? Does it mean from noon till sunset, or does it mean from sunset until dark? Those are the basic two meanings of it. The Jews divide up the afternoon in various ways, but it's that time when the sun is starting to go down as opposed to come up. Many of the modern translations have at twilight because they recognize that that is what it means. But let's go to a scripture that really nails it as to when it is. Over in the 16th chapter of Exodus, God through Moses recorded an event that took place. And this is a very significant chapter for a number of reasons. But God is reintroducing them to the Sabbath. And the children of Israel are complaining. It's the 15th day of the second month after they departed from the land of Egypt. This is not Passover night. This is a month later, a month and a day later. And then in verse 3, and the children of Israel said to them, although we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, when we ate bread to the full, for you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. So they're complaining. This is only a month after they've left Egypt, and now they're complaining that they don't have anything to eat. Now they had flocks and herds, and so you'd have milk and cheese, I guess. You'd have a number of things. But they're complaining about it. And so in verse 4, the Lord said to Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. You know, brethren, God is testing us. When you read over in the book of Deuteronomy, he says that I did these things to test you, to see what was in your heart. And God is testing you and me in various ways at different times to see what's in our heart. And when people start to, or they forget, and they have their own opinions on things, it reminded me of the time that somebody, some woman asked Mr. Armstrong, she said, I'd like to tell, it wasn't really a question, it was more of a statement. Let me give you a woman's point on this. That was the wrong thing to say, because he let her know right then and there he didn't give a hoot for what a woman's opinion was. He only cared for what God's opinion is on the subject. And sometimes our young people, teenagers, young adults, they think, well, I've got a better way. I know better. And you need to hear what my perspective is. Now, what we want to know is what God's perspective is. And probably all of us have made that mistake at one time or many times in life of thinking that our opinion is important. And really it isn't when you think about it. The only thing that matters is what God says. And so here we have this situation where God is testing the people. And what is the test? Whether they walk in my law or not. Now, what was the test that we read of here? You can read it for yourself. He was going to give them flesh to eat in the evening, and the next morning they would have manna. And they would have it for 5 days, and they were not to save it over to the next day because it would breed worms and stink. But on the sixth day, twice as much would be given, and they were able to save it over for the Sabbath day. That was the test that God gave. Now, it's interesting here. Let's just read it. In verse 5, it shall be on the sixth, verse 4. You gather a certain quota every day that I may test them whether they walk in my law or not. And it shall be on the sixth day that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily. Then Moses and Aaron said to all the children of Israel, at evening, Erev. Now, evening there is pretty generic. It can mean very late afternoon, it can be after dark, it can be dark. It's a very generic term. But it says here, at evening you shall know that the Lord has brought you out of the land of Egypt. Verse 7, and in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, for he hears your complaints against the Lord. But what are we that you complain against us? Moses and Aaron, you know, who are we that you complain against us? This is God working here. But, you know, it's interesting. When you think about it, here were people complaining against Moses because at that time they did not appreciate who Moses was. They was one of the greatest servants of God, far greater than anybody in modern times. But he held an office, and yet they were looking back on him and saying, well, you know, who's this Moses? Who's this Aaron? They did the same thing with the Apostle Paul. These ought to be clues for us as to how God works and what he's going to do. But it says, at evening you shall know that the Lord has brought you out of the land of Egypt. That's verse 6. Now verse 7. And in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, for he hears your complaints against the Lord. Notice they're not against Moses, but they're against the Eternal. But what are we that you complain against us? And Moses said, this shall be seen when the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening. Again, the word Erev. It's kind of a generic term for evening. And in the morning, bread to the full. For the Lord, or the Eternal, hears your complaints which you make against him. And what are we? Your complaints are not against us, but against the Eternal. Verse 9, then Moses spoke to Aaron, say to all the congregation of the children of Israel, come near before the Eternal, for he has heard your complaints. Now it came to pass, as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the children of Israel, that they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. And the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, verse 12, I have heard the complaints of the children of Israel. Speak to them, saying, at twilight. Now, before he's used the term Erev, or evening. Now he's saying between the two evenings. At evening, Ben Har Arbeayim, you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and you shall know that I am the Eternal, your God. The Old King James is rather interesting. Or maybe, no, it's not the Old King James. I think it's the Revised Standard Version. I was noticing, I checked a number of translations. It's one of those two. In Exodus, the 12th chapter, in verse 6, when it says that they are saved up till evening, it uses the term evening. But here, in Exodus 12, where it's not so controversial, you might say, it uses twilight, showing that the authors there knew what the meaning of between the two evenings was. Now, how do we know whether this is in the afternoon or whether it's after sunset? Well, when you read the whole chapter, you realize that the meat would come in the evening, the quail that would come, but in the morning would come the manna. And the manna would come for 5 days, and then the sixth day there'd be twice as much, and then you have the Sabbath. So what day of the week is this that this all happened? It's very clearly, it was on the Sabbath day. And so he's saying, at twilight, this evening, after the Sabbath, it'd be like today, this evening, between the two evenings, you shall have meat to eat. And in the morning, tomorrow morning, Sunday morning, we call it, I'm going to give you manna for day number one. Monday, day number two, all the way down to Friday, and then the Sabbath day. And when the people went out on the seventh day, he rebuked them for not keeping his law. So the question is, between the two evenings, that expression here, could it mean in the afternoon, which would have been on the Sabbath day, that he would then give them all these quail that they would have to knock out of the air, you know, as they're flooding through the camp, and they'd be chasing. You can imagine what this must have been like with the kids, you know, how the boys would be. They'd be chasing after them. The girls would too. And then mom or dad would be cleaning them, which was really pretty simple. They just hold the wings down and pull the legs and kind of pulls it right out of the skin. And then they'd have to, you know, put it on a fire and start cooking it. They would not be doing this in the middle of the afternoon on the Sabbath, when the whole purpose of this was to test them, to show them the necessity of keeping the Sabbath. It's simply impossible. They would not have done it. God would not have done it that way. I think that should be obvious to most people. And I think the translators understood that, and that's why they called it twilight. So it says, so it was, verse 13, the quails came up at evening. That's a generic term, but we know that Moses said that it would be at twilight, being very specific when it would be. Quails came up at evening and covered the camp, and in the morning the dew lay all around the camp, and when the layer of the dew lifted, there on the surface of the wilderness was a small round substance as fine as frost on the ground, in other words, the manna that started coming. So very clearly, the biblical definition of Ben Ha'arbayim, it's a very specific term. It's not just Erub, which is generic. It could mean, you know, various things. You could understand it various ways. But Ben Ha'arbayim, between the two evenings, makes it very clear that it would have been from sunset until dark in this particular case. Now, there's another matter back here in Exodus, the 12th chapter. Because you see, again, the Jews today and certain professing Christians say that this between the two evenings is in the afternoon of the 14th as opposed to the beginning. But we read here in verse 22 of Exodus 12 that there is this problem. It says, and you shall take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in the blood that is in the basin, and strike the lintel and the two doorposts with the blood that is in the basin, and none of you shall go out of the door of his house until morning. Now, I remember that it was explained by some of those who went off the rail that they didn't have to stay in all night long. We think of morning as 12:01. That's not how they counted time back then. Actually, they divided the night into four different periods of time, as you see from the New Testament. But the word here is boker, and it means when it starts to get light. The reasoning was that, well, once the death angel, or the angels of death, came through and slew all the firstborn, there was no need to stay in any longer. But that's not what the scripture says. It says, none of you shall go out of the door of his house until morning. Now, if God told you, don't go out of the house until morning, and you hear all this crying of people dying in houses nearby, would you test and go out? I don't think so. I think most of us would want to stay in. Now, some have said that, well, Moses and Aaron went out. Let's read that. Down in verse 29, it came to pass at midnight that the Lord struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who was on his throne to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon. And when it says midnight, does that mean 12 o'clock midnight or, you know, in the middle of the night sometime? We don't know for sure, but sometime in the middle of the night. So Pharaoh rose in the night, he and all his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. Then he called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, "Rise, go out from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you have said." So the idea is that here he called for Moses and Aaron, and I don't remember on the Ten Commandments movie, it may show them going there, I can't remember. But the idea is that Moses and Aaron then went to see Pharaoh, and Pharaoh told them, "Get out of here. Take all of your flocks, take everything with you, go away." But is that what happened? When it says call for them, it's a very specific word, but without getting into the Hebrew, well, let's go back to Exodus, the 10th chapter, Exodus 10. This is where we have the darkness that descended upon Egypt. And so Pharaoh called for Moses again in verse 24, Exodus 10, 24. Then Pharaoh called to Moses and said, "Go, serve the Lord, only let your flocks and your herds be kept back. Let your little ones also go with you." But Moses said, "You must also give us sacrifices and burnt offerings that we may sacrifice to the Eternal our God. Our livestock also shall go with us. Not a hoof shall be left behind." There was no compromise here. "For we must take some of them to serve the Eternal our God. And even if we do not, and even we do not know with what we must serve the Eternal until we arrive there." But the Eternal hardened the heart of Pharaoh, and he would not let them go. Verse 28. Then Pharaoh said to him, "Get away from me. Take heed to yourself, and see my face no more. For in the day that you see my face, you shall die." Now, Pharaoh goes back on his word all the time, so that doesn't mean a whole lot, does it? But notice verse 29. So Moses said, "You have spoken well. I will never see your face again." Did Moses tell the truth? Did he know what the score was? The 11th chapter is a little bit hard to understand because it gives a little bit of context to everything at this point in time. And then it continues after verse 29, Moses didn't leave instantly. He had a little bit more to say. Then Moses, verse 4, said, "Thus says the Eternal, about midnight I will go out into the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die. From the firstborn of Pharaoh who sits on his throne, even to the firstborn of the female servant who is behind the handmill, and all the firstborn of the animals. Then there shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as was not like it before, nor shall be like it again. But against none of the children of Israel shall a dog move its tongue, against man or beast. That you may know that you, Pharaoh, you may know that the Eternal does make a difference between the Egyptians and Israel. And all these your servants," notice, "all these your servants shall come down to me and bow down to me, saying, 'Get out,' and all the people who follow you. After that, I will go out." Then he went out from Pharaoh in great anger. So, you see, he kind of takes a break in there, and then we pick up the story when he says that "you've rightly said, I will never see your face again." Then he tells Pharaoh a little bit more. And Moses at this point is angry as well because it says he went out with great anger. So what we find here is that the servants of Pharaoh did come and they told him to get out. which they did, not instantaneously, because they obeyed God's command not to go out until Boker, till morning. And by the way, you can do a word study on that, the subject of the word that's translated for morning, and you will never find a single incident where it means in the middle of the night. It always means when it's starting to get light or it is light. It can be, well, it's still, you know, kind of twilight. It's just dawn, we might say, where it's not quite light yet. For example, the closest place that you could find of it using the expression to mean before it's light would be over in the book of Ruth. And Ruth lays down at the feet of Boaz and he says, stay here until morning. And when did she leave? Well, if he meant morning, that could be in the middle of the night, if we take that definition of it. What we see is that she leaves very early before one could discern who it was that they were seeing. So in other words, it's getting light. It's light enough for her to see where she's going and everything like that. But it's not so light that you could easily distinguish or notice who somebody was. But that's about as close as you can possibly get to Boker meaning any time other than that period of dawn. And even there, it's very clear that that's the context. That's what it means there. So they were told not to leave until morning. And so when they kept the Passover, they could not leave until the morning of the 14th. And then we find that they left Egypt at night, which means they left the next evening, the next night. And they were traveling to Ramses, where they had to leave from. The idea that they all went to Ramses because he had them all organized and ready to go, and half of them were in tents. It says, you know, houses. It's talking about where they were at the time. Now let's look at Exodus 12 and verse 35. Because here, they had a couple jobs to do. The first was that any of the meat that was left over, including the bones, had to be consumed in a fire. They had to, anything that they did not eat during that night, they had to burn in the morning. And they also, in verse 35, it says, now the children of Israel, it says, had done according to the word of Moses, and they had asked from the Egyptians articles, silver, articles of gold, and clothing, and the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. Now that's how it's often translated in some of the translations, had given, as though it was past tense. But the old King James is a little bit more accurate on this. It says they did what they were told to do. I was reading one source today, and it really points out, it might be the one I've got here in Josephus, that they spoiled the Egyptians after the death angel came through, after the Passover, in other words. And that makes perfect sense, both from a grammatical perspective here, or the tense of the verbs, but also the context of it. Why would the Egyptians just give them everything? They go over to their neighbor and say, hey, I want all these things. You know, the darkness is now light, that ninth plague, and it's not borrow. Every commentary says it wasn't borrow or lent, but to spoil the Egyptians to get what they were to, their wages for the time that they'd been there. After people lost their firstborn, they'd be ready to get them out of there no matter what. All the other things they recognized was a problem. But now, when they lost their firstborn, they're ready to say, we're all going to be dead if we don't get them out of here. And so just the context of it indicates that they did that. So they had to burn whatever was left over. They had to quickly gather up their possessions, which could have been done partly in advance. But then they had to spoil the Egyptians, which meant going throughout the neighborhood or maybe over the next town because of we don't know all the circumstances, how they live, but the Israelites pretty much lived separately from the Egyptians, and so they had to spoil them. That took time. They had to get to Ramses, which was several miles away for some of them, and it was from Ramses that they leave. Now let's take a look at some other references as to when Passover is and when the days of unleavened bread begin. Let's look at Leviticus 23. Leviticus 23 and verses 4 to 6. It says, "These are the feasts of the eternal, holy convocations, which you shall proclaim at their appointed times." Leviticus 23, verse 5. "On the 14th day of the first month at twilight is the Lord's Passover. And on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread to the Lord. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread." Well, that's pretty straightforward, pretty clear. Let's notice Numbers, the 28th chapter, beginning in verse 16. Numbers 28. In verse 16, it says, "On the 14th day of the first month is the Passover of the Eternal. And on the 15th day of this month is the feast. Unleavened bread shall be eaten for 7 days. And then the first day is a holy convocation. And the seventh day, verse 19, is also a, whichever verse you can read through there. But the first day and the last day, day one and day seven, are holy convocations. Let's notice, for example, over in Numbers 33. Numbers 33 and verse 5. It says, "Then the children of Israel moved from Ramses and camped at Succoth." Well, verse 3 actually is what I want. 33, verse 3, it says, "They departed from Ramses in the first month on the 15th day of the first month. On the day after the Passover, the children of Israel went out with boldness in the sight of all the Egyptians." So, on the 15th day, they began their journey out, and they're going that night and on into the daylight portion, no doubt, and the Egyptians are still burying their dead at that time. It took them a little while to get out of Egypt. They didn't just instantly leave Egypt. They instantly left for that, but it took them time. I'd like to go to Numbers, the 9th chapter, and let's see what the children of Israel did in the next year, the second year, how they kept the Passover. Because again, the idea that has been promoted is that they killed the Passover lamb on the 14th, but they ate the lamb and all the, you know, the bitter herbs and the unleavened bread and all that sort of thing was done on the 15th. But here in Numbers, the 9th chapter, it says, "The Lord spoke to Moses," verse 1, "in the wilderness of Sinai, in the first month of the second year, after they had come out of the land of Egypt, saying, 'Let the children of Israel keep the Passover at its appointed time.'" A very specific time there. "On the 14th day of this month at twilight, you shall keep it at its appointed time. According to all its rites and ceremonies, you shall keep it." Now, they didn't have to take blood and put it on their tents. There's no indication of that. That was, it was done at the very beginning. But the point is that it says, "In all of its ceremonies you shall keep it." So, killing the Passover is only part of the evening. Eating unleavened bread, bitter herbs, and so forth is also a part of it. It says, "According to all its rites and ceremonies, you shall keep it." So Moses told the children of Israel that they should keep the Passover. And they kept the Passover when? Verse 5, on the 14th day of the first month, at twilight, in the wilderness of Sinai, according to all that the Eternal commanded Moses, so the children of Israel did. Now we find this unusual circumstance. There are certain individuals who were defiled by a human corpse so that they could not keep the Passover on that day. And Moses, and they came to Moses and Aaron that day, and they said, well, you know, we were not able to keep it because of this ceremonial defilement that they had. And they wanted to know, they wanted to be able to keep the Passover. They were keeping it, they were looking forward to it. They wanted to keep the Passover. And so verse 8, Moses said to them, stand still that I may hear what the Eternal will command concerning you. So verse 9, the Eternal spoke to Moses saying, speak to the children of Israel saying, if any one of you or your posterity is unclean because of a corpse or is far away on a journey, that would be for time in the future, he may still keep the Lord's Passover. Verse 11, on the 14th day of the second month at twilight, they may keep it. Now notice that the keeping of it involves they shall eat it with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. They shall leave none of it until morning, nor break one of its bones. According to all the ordinances of the Passover, they shall keep it. So we find that the Passover isn't just the killing of the lamb, and then everything else is not the Passover. We call it the Passover because of all that's involved in it. He says, but the man who is clean and is not on a journey and ceases to keep the Passover, that same person shall be cut off from among his people because he did not bring the offering of the Eternal at its appointed time. That man shall bear his sin. Now, this is very important, brethren, because every once in a while you run into individuals that take keeping the Passover lightly, that think, well, I'll just keep the second Passover for some frivolous reason. Now, there are reasons. If you're over in the Middle East right now and can't get a plane out, you know, for the next month, that could be a very good reason to keep the second Passover. There are circumstances. Sometimes we have people who get sick and they can't come to keep the Passover, but they can keep it a month later, as we read here in the 9th chapter, on the second month, on the 14th day of the month, they can keep the Passover. But he points out that the one who is clean, in other words, he's not defiled, he's not sick, or he's not, ceremonially unclean as it was back then, doesn't apply to us in the same way today, but the principle is definitely there, and doesn't keep it, he says he's going to be cut off from his people. I heard a story sometime years ago that there was a couple that never made the first Passover. I think they didn't like to do the foot washing. And so they would always come to the minister and ask him if they'd keep the second Passover. Now, sometimes we give instructions for some people. They won't be able to keep the first or second. They're shut-ins and such a situation where they can keep it at home. But you see, when we decide that we're not going to do it the way God tells us or when God tells us, that becomes an issue and a problem. But God allows for people who get sick, for people who are stuck in traffic, as Mr. Strain was talking about there. We should plan ahead so that there is a problem. We used to say, you know, stop off at the local, if you're in Canada, Tim Hortons or local restaurant, Starbucks or whatever it might be, McDonald's, beforehand and get a cup of coffee. If it's close by, that way you know that you're going to be there. It's better to be there early. But we don't really want people coming in way early because there's the setting up of everything and making sure instructions, everybody knows what they're supposed to do. So I used to say don't come in before 15 minutes before the Passover starts, but at the same time, don't come in afterward. So be there in the neighborhood, sit in your car, go to Starbucks or whatever it might be, and then make sure that you're there close enough so that you don't have to take a chance on not being there. Now, depends on how far you have to travel and all kinds of factors, but that's just a suggestion that you try to be there as close as you can. But there is for those who, beyond their ability to do so, can't keep the Passover, there is that second month. But notice that it was all the ordinance of the Passover, shall he keep it? Now, does it make sense that you kill the lamb on the 14th, but you eat the lamb, the bitter herbs, the, you know, everything else, the unleavened bread, that you call, when you kill it, the Passover, but when you eat it, it's not the Passover? That just doesn't make sense. But this is the type of thing that people sometimes do. Clark's commentary says this, referring to Exodus 12 and verse 15, it says, this has been considered a distinct ordinance. Talk about the days of unleavened bread. This has been considered a distinct ordinance and not essentially connected with the Passover. The Passover was to be observed on the 14th day of the first month. The Feast of Unleavened Bread began on the 15th and lasted 7 days, the first and last of which were holy convocations. So even outsiders recognize that. Now, it's interesting because they can't quite sort this out, how the Jews keep it on the 15th. And so sometimes when you read, you have to kind of read between the lines because they get confused. I was reading Dennis Prager's commentary on Exodus, and he makes it very clear that it is a separate ordinance, but then he kind of shades it in such a way that you can interpret them keeping it on the 15th, even though it's clear that he knows better on that, that there were two separate ordinances. I'd like to read a little bit from Josephus. Josephus has a bit to say about the subject. He says, in the month of Xanthicus, which is by us called Nisan, and is the beginning of our year, on the 14th day of the lunar month, when the sun is such and such, the law ordained that we should every year slay that sacrifice which I before told you we slew when we came out of Egypt, and which was called the Passover. And so do we celebrate the Passover in companies, leaving nothing of what we sacrificed till the day following. So they had to, you know, destroy it sometime in that night. He says, the Feast of Unleavened Bread succeeds that of the Passover and falls on the 15th day of the month and continues 7 days. So it's clearly a separate feast there. Now, a little bit earlier, Josephus, by the way, that's, if you want to look that up, it's Antiquity of the Jews, Book 3, Chapter 10, 3, 10, Paragraph 5. Now let's go back to Book 2. And this is chapter 14, and paragraph 6. It says, but when God had signified that with one more plague he would compel the Egyptians to let the Hebrews go, he commanded Moses to tell the people that they should have a sacrifice ready, and that they should prepare themselves on the 10th day of the month, and it mentions Xanthicus, against the 14th. He says, and that he should carry away the Hebrews with all they had. Accordingly, he having got the Hebrews ready for their departure, and having sorted the people into tribes, he kept them together in one place. Now that is possible, but when it says kept them together in one place, we have to recognize that a lot of things that Josephus said just don't hold up. So you don't make doctrine based on it, but sometimes we can support doctrine based on these things. But whatever, they kept it in homes. It says, but when the 14th day was come, and all ready to depart, they offered the sacrifice and purified their homes with the blood, using bunches of hyssop for that purpose. And when they had supped, they burnt the remainder of the flesh, so just ready to depart. Whence it is that we do still offer this sacrifice in like manner to this day, and call this festival Pascha, which signifies the feast of the Passover. So the eating of it, very clearly he shows here, is part of the Passover, because on that day God passed us over and sent the plague upon the Egyptians for the destruction of the firstborn. So very clearly the Passover involves not only the killing of the lamb, but the eating of the lamb. And it says every place the Passover is the 14th, but the feast is the 15th, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. A little bit later, this is book 2, chapter 15, in the first paragraph, it says, we keep a feast for 8 days, which is called the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Now, the Bible says it is a feast for 7 days, but what he shows there is that this whole time is an 8-day period. You have Passover for a day, and then you have the Feast of Unleavened Bread for 7 days. By the time we get to the New Testament, the terms Passover and unleavened bread are pretty much used interchangeably. Remember that Jesus went up to Jerusalem to keep the Passover, and when the days were completed, the days, obviously the days of unleavened bread, and then we'll see another verse, or we can look at another verse, where it kind of refers to the whole time period, that whole period, and even including perhaps the time of the preparation for it. So let's go back to Exodus 12. Exodus 12. And we find that they kept the Passover, the death angel came through. If we say death angel, that may be angel of destruction, I think is how it says in Psalms, but we shorten to say the death angel. But hopefully we understand that. He says here, that they spoiled the Egyptians. And then in verse 37, then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot besides children, a mixed multitude. And they had a great amount of livestock. They baked unleavened cakes, verse 39, for it was not leavened because they were driven out of Egypt and could not wait. Now the sojourn, verse 40, of the children of Israel who lived in Egypt was 430 years. And that's technical, something needs a little bit of explanation, but I'll leave that for others at this time. And it came to pass at the end of the 430 years, on that very same day, it came to pass that all the armies of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. It is a night of solemn observance to the Eternal for bringing them out of the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Eternal, a solemn observance for all the children of Israel throughout their generations. So it is a night of solemn observance. I bring this out because sometimes people think, well, Passover is important, but the night to be observed, you know, that's not important. And part of the reason for that was because in worldwide, they began to change the Passover to the 15th. And so what is this night to be observed about? In other words, they just conflated the two. And yet these are two separate events. Notice in the 12th chapter and verse 26, it shall be when your children say to you, what do you mean by this service? He's talking about the Passover. That you shall say, it is the Passover sacrifice of the Eternal who passed over the houses of the children of Egypt, children of Israel in Egypt, when he struck the Egyptians and delivered our households. So the people bowed their heads and worshiped. So the Passover pictures the time of God passing over the children of Israel because of the blood on the doorpost and the lintel. But then in the 13th chapter, we read this, verse 5, it shall be, when the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and Hivites and the otherites, then he swore to your fathers to give you a land flowing with milk and honey. He says, verse 6, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Eternal, unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days. No leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. And you shall tell your son in that day, saying, this is done. Why? Because of the Passover? No. This is done because of what the Lord did for me when I came up from Egypt. It shall be as a sign to you on your hand and as a memorial between your eyes, that the Lord's law may be in your mouth. The Lord is talking about the time that they came out of Egypt. That's what the Days of Unleavened Bread picture. And we know that it took them 7 days to get out of Egypt. We believe it was on the seventh day. That's tradition among the Jews, and it makes sense, everything that we understand and how God works, that they walked through the Red Sea on the seventh day, and that was what got them all the way out. So the Feast of Unleavened Bread pictures leaving Egypt behind, leaving sin behind, the leavening behind, and being cleansed by, or eating unleavened bread, not cleansed by that. It was the Passover that we know cleanses, as it were. But going out from Egypt, it pictures us putting the leaven out of our lives. Now let's look at the New Testament. Let's go over to Mark, the 14th chapter, because this becomes very important for us to understand the timing of this. And we know that Jesus would have kept the Passover at the right time. But here in Mark, the 14th chapter, and verse 12, it says, now on the first day of unleavened bread, when they killed the Passover, or the Passover lamb, as I said, by the time you get to the New Testament, even before that, well before that, the term Passover and unleavened bread became somewhat interchangeable. There were still distinct ways that each were to be kept and distinct meanings for it, as we will see what Christ did on the Passover, not on the Days of Unleavened Bread. But here it says, the first day of unleavened bread, when they killed the Passover lamb. So this is the killing of a Passover lamb. It's coming up to that time when they are to kill the Passover lamb and to keep the Passover. And then we read this account. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all tell the same story, that he sent his disciples to go in and prepare the place for the Passover. And then they met and they kept what the world calls the Last Supper, sometimes referred to the Eucharist, but the Last Supper as they call it. In reality, it was not the Last Supper. It might have been his Last Supper with them, although he ate, I think, later on of Galilee. He had some food prepared for them when they were out in the boat. But whatever way you want to look at that, it's not the Last Supper, it's the Passover. And that has been hidden by professing Christianity. They've taken a very different view on what it is. Up here in Asheville, I went to a seminar by a Jewish man who used the book of Mark to try to prove that the Passover was not that last meal that Christ ate. It was amazing. It was an all-day seminar, in the morning and the afternoon, with lunch in between, trying to prove from the book of Mark that Jesus did not eat the Passover with his disciples. And yet here it says that they killed the Passover lamb. It was the day they killed the Passover lambs. And then in verse 16, the disciples went out and came into the city and found it just as he had said to them, and they prepared the Passover. And if you go over to Luke's account, he says about 7 times that it was the Passover. So Matthew, Mark, and Luke all call it the Passover, and yet you've got some Jewish scholar out there. I don't know why he was worried about what Christians do, as he would see them. It was for ministers. And because I would go up to the hospital and we had to register and everything, I guess I got an invitation through that. I'm not sure exactly how I heard about it, but I thought it'd be interesting, and it was. It was interesting because he couldn't have gotten it more wrong. It's amazing. Matthew and Mark make it abundantly clear that the Last Supper was the Passover. Now, in the book of John, John writes later, the synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, leave some things out, and John clarifies some things later on. So the 18th chapter of the book of John tells us, in verse 28, says, then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium, and it was early morning. So this was on the night of the Passover. This is the 14th. But they themselves did not go into the praetorium, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. So it is clear from the scriptures that there were two Passovers that were kept there. And there's some historical evidence of all this. And the Jews have always been arguing over various things, as they say, and I'm not picking on Jews. Christ was a Jew, so please understand. But if you have two Jews, you have three opinions, as they say, because they're very opinionated about things, very brilliant in many ways, but when it comes to the scriptures, sometimes they're lacking. And so here, they did not go in because they wanted to keep the Passover. They were keeping it a day later. Today, they keep it two nights. They keep it on the 15th and they keep it on the 16th. Back then, apparently they kept it on the 14th because Jesus kept it on the 14th. Because as we read there in the 19th chapter and verse 31, John 19, 31, therefore, because it was a preparation day that the bodies should not remain on the cross on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was an high day. That's something I think we all know. The Jews asked Pilate that they might break his legs and so forth. So very clearly, this was leading up to a high day. And please, if you have any questions on it, read the booklet on Easter, the Untold Story. It goes into the chronology of all of this. And it's certainly a very good supplement for this on this subject. It's evident that there were two different days on which the Jews kept the Passover, but Jesus kept it before the Holy Day, the day before the Holy Day, the High Day. He would have kept it on the 14th, and that tells us when we should keep it. You know, the night to be much observed is meaningless if you think that Passover was the 15th in the Old Testament, because some said, well, we keep it at the right time in the New Testament, but we're not sure about the Old Testament. No, we're sure about the Old Testament. And I will say this, that it can be a very confusing subject because there are places that it would seem like it's talking about that same night. It's all condensed there. But when you look at all the evidence is clear. Now, Christ was our Passover for us. 1 Corinthians 5:7. I won't take time to turn there. But it says, for even Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. So Jesus Christ is our Passover. And over in 1 Peter, the first chapter, 1 Peter 1, very important passage here. In verse 13, says, therefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Now, use the word grace there. And this is so important because really what I want to get down to, and I'm running out of time, but the fact is that we go to one extreme or the other. And we see this in the writings of the apostles. The apostle Paul was dealing with the Jews who tried to justify, in other words, make right their past by all kinds of physical duties. James was talking to a different group of people who thought that behavior doesn't matter. I often say that Paul talked to the Catholics and James talked to the Protestants. Now, we know there were no Catholics or Protestants at that time, but he talked to that mindset. And in the church, sometimes we get caught someplace in the middle where we do not appreciate the sacrifice of Christ, and we feel guilty. We run around our whole life feeling guilty. And then at the same time, you have other people that behavior doesn't seem to matter at all because they do all kinds of things and it doesn't seem to affect them whatsoever. And both extremes are wrong. As it says here, as obedient children, verse 14, verse 15, but as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct. So conduct does matter. Because it is written, be holy for I am holy. And if you call on the Father who without partiality judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves throughout the time of your day here in fear, knowing that you were not redeemed with corruptible things. There's a certain fear or respect or appreciation for the fact that we were redeemed from death, not with corruptible things like silver or gold or from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. So we need to understand the significance of the Passover, that he has redeemed us. He has paid the price for our sins. When we sin, we can't go back and undo it. We can beat up on ourselves, but that won't undo it. It's kind of like I can feel badly enough to where I finally, it's in the past. Or some people think that, okay, if a long enough period of time goes by, it's somehow forgotten. No, there's only one way, and that's through the blood of Christ and faith in that blood and accepting his grace. That's what we must do. But at the same time, the days of unleavened bread tell us that conduct does matter. We have to put sin out of our lives. We must be growing. We must be changing. But God never intended for you and me to walk around with this cloud of guilt hanging over us, because we're all guilty of sin. Please don't go to one extreme or the other. Understand what Christ did for us. Understand what we have to do. But then appreciating what has been done for us. In Romans, the fifth chapter, Romans 5, we read here in verse 8, it says, but God demonstrates his own love toward us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Much more than having now been justified, having our past sins forgiven by his blood, and being made right once again, brought in line with God, we shall be saved from wrath through him. Notice that we are not saved by his blood, but we are saved from wrath through him. For if, verse 10, when we were enemies, we were reconciled to God, brought back to a right relationship with God, through the death of his son, much more having been reconciled, we shall be saved by his life. And you can read Galatians 2:20, which shows us how. I'd like to read one final scripture over in Hebrews, the 9th chapter. Because you see, there are those in Judaism, there are those in Catholicism, there are those in various other religions, and that could include you and me, depending on how we think on these things, who try to justify ourselves through some other means than the sacrifice of Christ. But here in Hebrews 9:11, but Christ came as high priest of the good things to come, with a greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is not of this creation. He didn't come with the blood of goats and calves. He's a high priest, but he didn't bring those things along. But with his own blood, he entered the most holy place, the very throne of God, once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. Some people misunderstand and think that at Passover, our sins are suddenly forgiven. No, they were forgiven before. Passover is a memorial. It's a remembrance of what has already been done. It is not as though we suddenly cleansed at Passover. No, we were cleansed at baptism, and Christ is our high priest, and he goes to the Father on our behalf. But this is a remembrance. This is a memorial of what Christ has done for us. For if the blood of bulls and goats and the ashes of a heifer sprinkling the unclean, verse 13, sanctifies for the purifying of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God, cleanse your conscience, notice, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living God. In the sacrifices of the Old Testament, there was always a remembrance of sin, a reminder of their sins. But God, through Jesus Christ, came to cleanse our conscience of those past sins. We can't go back. We can do nothing about the past except ask for God's forgiveness, sincerely, heartfeltly, and then pick ourselves up and go forward. Learn from our mistakes, but not dwelling on them day after day and thinking, oh, I wonder if I'll make it. No, God gives us good news through the sacrifice of his Son. So Passover, whether it be the Old Testament, picturing the New Testament Passover, the night to be observed, the beginning of our leaving Egypt, the time to celebrate as well. And the days of unleavened bread teach us that we must change, we must grow, we must overcome. But above all else, we need to understand that we have a great sacrifice that has been made on our behalf through the death of our Creator, the one that gave us life in the beginning. And his precious blood has been shed that we don't have to walk around continually with a guilty conscience.